Okay, the next one is Hannah Laughlin. And Hannah is a community health educator, obesity intervention and prevention. Hannah started her career in public health to address issues of obesity in Indiana. She has researched, developed, and implemented a pediatric weight management program goal to teach overweight and obese children about healthy eating, physical activity, feelings, and community resources. She also works with the local school systems on coordinated school health initiatives and is developing an action plan for obesity prevention through policy and environmental change for IU Health Bloomington. Her areas of interest include obesity, pediatric health, and community-based programming, and making APHA a bigger membership pool.
Everybody, it's 5 o'clock, so let's all just like stand up and like wiggle for a minute. We're all packed in here like tight, but just take a quick stand-up break, stretch it out. Maybe reach those arms up. I do pediatric obesity stuff, so shake it out. Everybody's getting a little, stay in your seat. All right. Stretch it out. Good. All right. So I run a program called GOAL, which stands for Get On Board Active Living. We originally were going to call it Get On Active Living, and then we realized teenage boys might not think that was like the best name, Get On. So it's Get On Board Active Living now. And it's about the role of, I'm going to talk about the role of community collaboration in addressing childhood obesity. I have no financial relationships to disclose. I wish I did, but I don't. Really quick, I need to just thank some of our sponsors. We have grant funding currently from our local community foundation, the hospital community foundation that I work for, the Finish Line Youth Foundation, and the Smithville Charitable Foundation. And part of our program was adopted from Reed Memorial Hospital in Richmond, Indiana's STOP program. So GOAL is great because it has 8 community partners, which is really incredible. I live in a community that really does great at doing community collaborations, so we're really fortunate to be able to have all these people come on board. So I work for IU Health Bloomington. It's our local hospital. City of Bloomington Parks and Recreation. Southern Indiana Pediatrics is our only pediatric practice in Bloomington, 22 providers all in one office together. Both school systems in our county are involved, the YMCA is involved, and then we have the wonderful resource of Indiana University in our community. We have 2 different partnerships with IU, one with the Department of Kinesiology and one with the Office of Community Health Engagement. So Indiana, it looks pretty much like the rest of the nation. We all know 1 in 3 children are overweight nationally. In Monroe County, it's about 32.6% of our children in 2009 overweight. What this slide doesn't say is when you break this down by socioeconomic status, what you see is that about 40% of our Medicaid children are overweight and about 22% of our privately insured children are overweight. So when we started looking at childhood obesity in our community and what we could do about it, we really realized we needed something that we were going to be able to offer for free to our families because it's an issue that, you know, is so based on socioeconomic status. So the GOAL program, like I said, has 8 partners, and it really allows us to offer a really comprehensive approach to addressing childhood obesity at the community level. It involves concepts of systems thinking, as well as utilizing the socioecological model to promote health education through collaboration. And we find it's great because it not only promotes healthy bodies and mind for our overweight children and their families, but also for us as community partners. It really re-engages us in the issues in our community and keeps us motivated and involved as well. So GOAL, like I said, is a completely free, family-focused community approach to decreasing childhood obesity and encouraging healthy lifestyles for children and their families through education and activity. Our mission is pretty much what I just said, but we are focusing on nutrition, healthy eating, fitness, which, you know, healthy moving, behavioral habits. We call that more now healthy emotions for our children. I loved the opening session, the woman who talked about mental health and how many children had adverse experiences early in their life. We see that a lot, so we focus on that a lot. And then also we focus a lot on our community and how it can help make positive, lifelong, healthy changes. We don't focus on losing weight because we work with kids who are 6 to 18. So it's really hard to tell a 6-year-old you want them to lose 3% of their body weight, right? They don't understand that. So we just talk about learning how to maintain a healthy weight. We don't focus on the numbers at all. We just talk about healthy behaviors. We teach them about a healthy diet, developing better exercise habits, and what we find is that they really don't have any habits at all. So we help them create some exercise habits, reducing those sedentary behaviors, and then working on building a strong family relationship to work on these issues. Our moms always say, well, I'm just nagging them about it. I don't want to lock the cabinets, and I don't want to nag them about it, so I don't know how to make this work. So we really give them the support they need to work on it as a family, and then pursuing other healthy interests. So children get to our program through this wonderful community collaboration with our pediatricians and primary care doctors in our community. Any child with a BMI over the 85th percentile is referred to us. And then I work one-on-one with those families to do follow-up and get them involved. We do schedule them for an initial appointment in our office. They have to go through a list of barriers and make sure they're capable of coming. We ask them if they're, you know, they can have a car to get to us every week. Do they have child care for their younger kids? Are you willing to fill out a food log? Make sure we can address all those barriers, and then we enroll them in our program. So our program is really 24 weeks long. 12 of it is an intensive program, one night a week for 2 hours. We operate on this schedule. So it's 2 hours long, like I just said. The first 15 minutes, we do checking in. We check family food and exercise logs. Each week, we set a nutrition and an exercise goal for each child and hopefully their family as well. And then we ask them to walk on the track to warm up while everybody else checks in. And what I should say is I did say the child was referred. When the child's referred, we do expect at least one adult, if not their whole family, to participate in the program. We do 45 minutes of exercise together as a whole family, and then we do nutrition and behavior each for 30 minutes. We do this, the adults all go to behavior together, the kids all go to nutrition together, and then we flip-flop. And we really do that because you see the word snack up there. You would be amazed at how many parents are the holdup on a kid trying a new snack and having an open mind to it. So if you're sitting next to your friend in goal and they try it and they like it, that'd be great. But if you sat next to your parent who doesn't like yogurt and they're not going to try a yogurt parfait, the odds of you trying it, not going to happen. So we break them up for the last hour. During that initial visit, they meet with our dietitians and go over kind of initial food habits. We get kids that come into those appointments and eat 25 grain servings a day, 800 calories in sugar-sweetened beverages. So we really focus one-on-one with them during that time. And we do an initial exercise assessment to get some pre- and post-data there. And then a behavioral questionnaire. Like I said, it's a 24-week program. It's 12 weeks. And here's the part that's really unique about our community is that our partners are really engaged in being active partners in our program. So 9 of the weeks are set up like I just told you. The other 3 weeks are field trip weeks, which this week is actually field trip week. I'm missing it. And they're going to go to the IU basketball, go hang out with IU basketball team and Tom Crean. Not that we don't know how they're going to be this year, but it's going to be really exciting for the kids. 12 of the weeks are set up like that, and then the 12 following weeks are set up completely for support as the families. We don't see them every week. We see them once a month, but we do provide them support there. So in our exercise section, we focus a lot on games. I have one physician who likes to refer kids to our program and say it's going to be like Biggest Loser. It's not. I keep telling her, please stop referring kids like that. We focus completely on family exercise games. So pedometers, teaching them about rate of perceived exertion in a way they can understand. Doing some resistance training, jump roping is kids' like favorite thing to do. It's so cheap and fun. Zumba, which is great. I don't know how many of you have Zumba. We kickboxed in Zumba last week. It was really fun. And then the TV game show, Minute to Win It. Great spins you can put on that and play some games with kids and get them moving. And our goal here is just to get them sweating for 45 minutes. I always ask them, are you sweating? And they're like, oh, yeah. And by the end, the first session, they're like embarrassed that they're sweating. And by the end, they're like, yeah, we're sweating. So it's great. This is the part that we kept from the Reed Memorial Hospital STOP program. We use a nutrition model called the food house. The food pyramid kind of was seeming to be a little hard to understand as it was going through its transitions. And this is a model that, as you can see in that picture, that is actually like a life-size dollhouse that has food rooms. So the idea is that you go to your bottom level of your house most often at home. So you go to those rooms in your food house most often. And then fruits and vegetables, second most often. And then dairies, meats, and proteins, third most often. Added foods are any food with added sugar or added fat, so we try to avoid those as much as possible, but not something you have to never avoid, right? You keep your Christmas decorations in your attic. You got to go up there sometime. So we do that as well. We talk a lot about label reading, a lot about portion sizes. Those are questions we get a lot. And like I said, we do a lot of taste testing of kind of unusual food. In behavior, we focus just about healthy people. What does it mean to be a healthy person? And talk about that as opposed to words that are so stigmatized around weight and the way people can often feel about their weight. We talk about self-esteem, emotions, emotional eating and how it can lead to inactivity, reframing emotions, talking about bullying. It's a hot topic right now in the media. Our parents always want to talk about it. But we give our kids action plans. If that happened to you, what would you do? If someone was bullying your best friend, what would you do? We do some role playing there. And then we do positive and personal affirmations. So this is my favorite part. Each week they get a post-it note that says something positive about themselves that they get to take home. So the idea is by the end of 12 weeks, you could go home to your bathroom mirror and have them all up. Every time you went to the bathroom, you could see them. We start by writing them for them, and we end with them writing them about themselves. And then, like I said, community field trip week, it's the most kind of easy breezy week. We introduce them to free or inexpensive community resources that they can use to make healthy changes. So not just anything, but our farmer's market, our rail to trail. We have IU athletics, like I mentioned, so we use a lot of the sports teams there. Hiking, roller skating, ice skating, things like that. Just ways to do, excuse me. Unstructured activity, fun recreation. And then after they graduate from 12 weeks, they come back for every month for 3 months, they come back to our field trips and mentor our new families. And we have a second partnership where after they graduate from the 12 weeks, they work one-on-one with a fitness specialist student from IU and do personal training for 12 weeks, which is really great. IU Office of Community Health Engagement does all our evaluation. Here's our data from the first year. I think it's pretty good. I'll let you read it really quick. And then I'm going to just leave you with this testimonial. Everybody done? So why it works, we have over $85,000 of in-kind support. It's free. We have a great program team of 5 people who are dedicated, and it's awesome.
Cool. All right. Thank you very much. Man, doing this thing on Halloween Day, man. Being the boobo in the room. We're going to the next person. This is Jessica Tula. She is talking about creating an informed network. And Jessica, I'm going to read this, Jessica. I had it all so nicely printed out. She completed her doctorate in epidemiology as an NIOSH, I'm not going to pronounce that, Occupational Injury Prevention Fellow at the University of Texas School of Public Health. Her dissertation work evaluated physical and psychosocial outcomes of a participatory intervention in a hospital setting. With the Institute of Health Policy, she has helped develop the Health of Houston Survey 2010, the first household survey to provide communities with information about the health of people living in the greater Houston area. You have the floor, my lady.
There's games.
All right, everybody.
Right.
So as he so helpfully introduced, my name is Jessica Teller. I'm here all the way from Houston, and the rest of our team is based out of Houston, and we also have a team member from the Houston Department of Health and Human Services, but we're mostly with the School of Public Health. I have no relationships to disclose. So the Health of Houston survey, we have, just to give you some context, we were funded by the Houston Endowment, and the intent was to be a gift back to the community. So the first piece, you know, it's not useful unless we are able to support health agencies and service providers in the community, get data, health data about their area. What's novel about this, I'll talk more about it in a second, but this, there's plenty of health data out there. There's lots of different surveys. People know about some of these things, national surveys and so forth. One of the things we wanted to do was to, I guess the next point, tailor the topics of our survey to the needs and the questions that the community had. So we actually went to the community first and said, what is it you can't find? What is it you want to know? And then tried to generate a survey around that. And thirdly, we're working on, we've developed an infrastructure to track emerging health issues, assess program impacts, with it being administered in 2010, that's before many of these Health Reform Act things are going to come into place, and so we're hoping it's going to be a baseline for some future work. And then finally, the most important, we want to guarantee full access and use back to the community, so right now we're working on cleaning up and finalizing our public use data file, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. But the second and the fourth tie together. Unless you ask the community what it is they want to know, why would they come look to you for information? So we ask before we even do anything, so that by the time we get to the end and we have something, look, see, you asked. Here's your answer. Here's some information. So we developed collaboratives, or at least I guess made use of existing collaboratives, to identify potential stakeholders. There are groups out there that meet together that have multiple organizations and multiple viewpoints, and you can just go talk to them as opposed to contacting each individually. We also asked them about questionnaire content, as I discussed, and maybe some ideas as far as data collection, as far as getting people interested in letting the community know about the survey before they get a phone call, what we should be doing. So those were all the kinds of things we talked to community partners about. So we did kind of, that first part was more of an informal thing. You go sit down in a room, you have a discussion, you hear some, you know, build some camaraderie, hear some ideas, and then we sent out something a little bit more structured, just so that we could report back to them, this many people said, blah. It's kind of hard to get to that consensus if you don't create an opportunity that could get you to the consensus. So we had a list of 67 topics. You'll see on the bottom here, this is kind of just a snapshot of a piece of our sets of topics. And they were organized kind of within general kinds of areas so that if you were interested in a certain area, you could kind of direct yourself to that and endorse the things you were interested in. We had some other sections of this input form. I'm avoiding calling it a questionnaire because we actually did a questionnaire to actual residents, so this was to kind of key informants, if you think about it. We also included a section to give key informants an opportunity to talk about their organization's priorities. Because maybe you're interested in several topics, but what are your top three priorities? We offered this in two modes. We offered a web-based function that was efficient, cheap. Everybody, you know, in organizations is moving towards that direction now. But we also sent out paper-based forms that people could mail back to us or fax back to us. I mean, sometimes there are those capabilities we can use, especially when we didn't have an email address to go to. So we had more than 150 responses from 88 unique organizations. Sometimes you have more than one key informant from an organization, so that's why I tell you about both. In our area, some big names were the Harris County Healthcare Alliance. That was a group of a bunch of different hospitals and academics, people in the area. Gateway to Care was much more clinics and community-based clinics, their kind of go-to place. One Voice Texas did a lot more policy work and social services. The Houston Department of Health and Human Services. And also we went out to local community groups and civic associations. I went out to their umbrella group organization and introduced the idea and tried to get them interested and see if we could get some input back. So this is the results we got from all of those groups, 150 people, 88 organizations. The biggest, easiest endorsed topic people were interested in was family violence, and the second was diet obesity. Unfortunately, from a population perspective, from a population survey perspective, family violence is relatively rare, so it's difficult. That's why it's not usually on these population-based surveys, because it's how could you justify putting a question on there you're only going to have 0.2%, you know, kind of endorsed. And yet, this gave us the power to be able to say, we have to include this question, because this is, you know, everybody's interested in it. So we, you know, we were it can help you tailor things. You know that people are still going to be answered, even if it's not a high prevalence issue, but important. And then I give you the topic priorities. I don't list them because you know, one organization said number one, another one said number two. So we just give you kind of an overall the top priorities. They're similar. Mental and behavioral health kind of appear on both. We have diet obesity appearing on both, so you see some consensus there. And so those were used to develop our topics. This is a list of our topics, just to give you an idea where we went. So now I'm going to start with kind of the lessons learned from that process. So that was all the good, right? The topic, the description for this, the good, the bad, and the ugly. That was all the good. Okay, we got response. People responded. Yay. And we sent, you know, fact sheets back to them. Thank you so much. Here's the summary. The not so good, the bad, was that, you know, community coverage was not equal. There are not every neighborhood has a civic association. So we unfortunately could not, you know, our responses were weighted to areas with better organized representation. We inherit other organizations' history with the community. This is just something I'm sure you guys are familiar with. If some other organization has gone out there and something went wrong or whatever, you coming into the community or you trying to talk to people, it helps to know. So at least you can start off that conversation with, okay, I know this is how it worked before. What could we do better? So just something to be aware of. Also, I give this picture of, this is the Houston Medical Center, or Houston Downtown, excuse me. I give you this picture just to give you an idea that, I mean, resources are finite. In this area, there's obviously a lot of different organizations. We're all kind of competing for the same pot of dollars. So, thank you. Communicating with organizations. We found, obviously, a benefit to using existing provider organization networks. They already have meetings set up. They already have times. They're going to be together. And if you can talk to someone there and see if you can't get on their agenda, it just makes things more efficient. Obviously, this is not rocket science, but having communication materials is helpful because sometimes you don't get to talk to them. I apologize. You have to leave something there, or you have to send them something. So having a brochure, having a fact sheet, after the fact, like I told you, getting back to them with your findings, very helpful. As I said, early input helped us pare down that topic list, and we included those multiple modes to try and reach a more diverse group of partners. So you're not just reaching those that are available by email and can do internet. You're also getting some people that mailed in some information, which was very helpful. And this is just you can see it's a little bit small, but just to give you an idea of what our fact sheet looked like, what we sent back. So we kind of had a verbal description and then response rate, because they're curious, how many people did you hear? So, and finally, our intention, bringing data back to the community. We have, these are our two modes. I'm going to show you the first. This is called Nestar, and basically anybody in the community is going to be able to go to this website in a couple of weeks and look at the distributions of every single question themselves. And if they want to, once they just sign an agreement saying that, you know, they know they're getting data, and if they need help, they can come to us. It's a use agreement. They'll get a public use file. Free, no questions. You know, and if they want help, that's what we also intend to provide training, et cetera. The second, I think, a little bit more accessible version is called Instant Atlas, and it's going to map out all of these prevalences, all of these variations. So, again, this is just giving you an idea of what our final product looks like. Again, anybody will be able to use this. And it's a little bit more user-friendly. If you have any questions, that's our principal investigator, our project manager, and there's my email. Thank you very much.
Thank you.